Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true. All the flowers of spring could never make them sing like the way that our love grows.
Hello and welcome to the 43rd Music of Marriage radio show with
Bob and
Evie. And today we're going to continue on God's love language, a word study of 1 Corinthians 13. We've been breaking it down one word at a time to force ourselves to meditate on things that we easily glaze over and think, well, of course, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. Of course, don't we know that? Moving right along, what was I going to do next? Or what was I going to think or say next? But we're trying to back up and stop for a minute and think and meditate. Wait, and we did a series actually on our website, themusicofmarriage.com. You can hear repeats of, we're starting to put up the radio shows as podcasts. Mm-hmm. So feel free to listen to them and share that with your friends. And also at themusicofmarriage.com, you can buy our book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing, 5 Key Biblical Dynamics to Keep the Music Playing. And so we have original music on there, too. You can download and listen to. And we hope as time goes on and we get this whole radio show thing kind of more that comfortable, which we're pretty comfortable with, I think. But we hope to get more of our own, maybe playing live on the show, make it a little more interesting. Right, Bob?
Correct, Evelyn. So, as usual.
No. What we're trying to do here today is deal with this word in God's love language in 1 Corinthians 13 from the verse, love is patient. These are God's words. These aren't just words that you see on a plaque in a store. God's love language says, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. And it goes on. Today we're on the word boast. Last week we were on envy. Those aren't words we often think, boast? What do you mean, boast? What does that have to do with love? I could see kind, patient, not irritable, but boast. What? Why would God, in his love language, say love does not boast? So, Bob, why don't you tell us the dictionary of definition and rock and roll into this whole concept of how in your marriage does boasting figure in to what creates those good musical dynamics that keep the music playing.
Yeah. And just to note, the dictionary definitions only really cover one aspect of what we generally know about words. However, the Bible's definitions on words are more broad and extensive and cover the whole dynamic of human life and how it's affected by spiritual forces of good and evil, and how it relates to connecting people and how relationships work.
And how marriage works, specifically. Yes. The music of marriage.
So anyway, we have this word boast, which most of us probably don't think we do any boasting or much boasting. But let's look at it a little more closely. Boast is an act of talking with excessive pride and self-satisfaction. For instance, his mother had been boasting about him. Well, it's okay to boast about somebody else, but when it comes to yourself, that's another story. Brag, crowl, swagger, swank.
A crow, sorry.
Yeah. Those are more
swank. I remember back in the olden days when My dad wore, the men wore ties and suits all the time, and there was a brand called Swank Tie Clips and Swank Ties. There might have even been a men's store or some brand, Swank. And I looked up here this dictionary definition of boast and saw one of the synonyms was swank. And I looked up that word, and that word means to display one's wealth, knowledge, or achievements in a way that is intended to impress others.
Yeah.
And to show off, exaggerate, and overstate, and so forth. But anyway, go ahead, Bob, with...
Yeah, and a lot of sayings that we're familiar with, we've heard over the years, are related to that. That, and this is where this idea comes from. Sayings like, what can I say? Lay it on thick, or he's laying it on thick, or blowing one's own horn. You know, you've heard those kinds of sayings.
So there's a good kind of boasting, which God's love language talks about that, what we are to boast in. But unfortunately, in God's love language, boasting, and which synonym is also being arrogant and prideful, we start to begin to say, oh yeah, now I see, boasting. Me boast? Me boast a lot, more than I realize.
In fact, we are covering another word from 1 Corinthians 13, and that is love is not arrogant. And so we're kind of combining arrogance with boasting because they're really two sides of the same coin. And the dictionary says arrogance is exaggerating or disposed to exaggerate one's own worth or importance, often by an overbearing manner. Mm. Showing an offensive attitude of superiority, proceeding from or characterized by arrogance.
So now I can relate to that.
You can.
In myself.
I concur. I mean, I'm sorry to hear that.
I actually laid awake a while last night apologizing to God and thinking, this is awful, how arrogant and boastful I am.
Yeah.
And how much self-seeking I do, and how that affects my relationship to my husband and people around me, because I often do. I think in our marriage, that's been one of the challenges is my self-confidence, self-righteous tendencies, to be honest. And I'm really happy to be so confident about everything. The problem is.
She even had a window treatment business once back in the day called Right at Home.
Yes, and so they think my first name is Wright. So when I get emails, it's Dear Wright, capital R-I-G-H-T. And I'm like, well, how appropriate, since I'm always Wright. Now, I think you've all heard about the tree that falls in the woods, and if the man doesn't hear it, is the wife always...
Is it still his fault? If no one hears it, is it still the man's fault? Right.
So it's really fun to be right all the time. But when they start addressing you as Dear Mrs. Dear Wright, then you know. No, just kidding. But it's not really kidding, because being disposed to exaggerate one's own worth or importance, and this is the key. We should all know our worth. All of us have great worth. It's not just me, because I maybe do something better or see something more quickly or do a better job of something than somebody else or than my spouse. We are all of equal worth in God's sight. So that is probably why in his love language he put love does not boast as one of the words, because exaggerating your own worth often comes across in an overbearing manner. And that's the key to where there's this feeling that you're kind of looking down on the person, your spouse, because, you know, that was just dumb, or you're just kind of not there, or what's wrong with you, why aren't you as smart as me? Why couldn't you see it the way I do? We know, we all know how this works. We've dealt with this since we were about 1.5 years old, I think.
And often those statements are communicated indirectly through
right.
other words that maybe appear more subtle.
Yeah, which I'm really good at. I just might as well admit it. And then there you go, Bob. I admitted it on national, on wherever you are listening. Showing an offensive attitude of superiority, proceeding from arrogance. And I know that's a big problem with me. So I really asked God last night. I couldn't get to sleep because I drank a Diet Coke, which had caffeine, and I just laying there. So I got to meditate on all these things we had been writing and studying, and I just felt really kind of sad. I said, man, I'm really looking in the mirror here, studying this word boast and arrogant. I'm really looking in the mirror, and it's not a good picture.
No,
so I asked God to forgive me and to help me to change my point of view and to take more seriously how destructive and divisive and vain I am when I carry that attitude or come off with an attitude of superiority toward my husband or anybody for that matter. So we're going to delve into how to break down and conquer walls in your marriage and relationships by removing boasting and arrogance, actually replacing it. Jay Adams always said, if you just try to get rid of a bad habit or a bad character trait, there's a hole there. So you have to replace it, not just
yes.
remove it. That's what I call a marriage replacement therapy or something in our book. But,
and in the same way, you have to bring up the negative in order to understand the positive, which is what 1 Corinthians 13 does. The Apostle Paul writes what love is, but what it isn't. And often what it is more clearly understood by what it isn't. That's the same in many different ways.
So we want to try to plow through... We really had a good time going through this study of boasting and arrogance and its impact in our love life and in our marriages. And so we saw a lot of amazing things that will help you too, I think, and really encourage you about really how easy it is to change the dynamic, the musical, to make your marriage sing by changing some of these dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bob, how does removing boasting and arrogant attitudes help to break down the walls in our marriages? Psalm 5:5 in the Bible, David was a musician. He sat out there and played songs to the sheep as a kid for years, the youngest of, I think, 12 boys, until the prophet Samuel came to him and said, hey, guess what? Your God is going to anoint you to be king. But all that time he spent writing music, making music, I think as musicians, we can dig that. We can relate to that and think, what a cool life to sit out. What a cool job, really, to sit out on the hillside all day, quote unquote, watching the sheep. And your job is to write music. But he had a heart for God, and that all came out. And in one of those psalms, he writes, and this is all God breathed, God inspired in the scriptures. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all evildoers. If you can't even stand before God if you're boastful, because he says, the boastful shall not stand before you. You hate all evildoers. Then certainly being boastful and arrogant is going to have a negative impact on your marriage, which I've noticed coming from me. So, Bob, you want to take it away with some of these other points here?
And, you know, the thing is you may be a very good person, but if you're there's another side to boasting or arrogance, and that is being judgmental. So if you're judgmental toward others who you feel aren't quite up to your level, or maybe you're annoyed by some person's weaknesses, and so you judge that person across the board or write them off. And of course, this could be any relationship, but it often happens in marriage. Well, you know, then that is a form in itself of arrogance. And we have no business judging others for their faults or weaknesses. So we have to acknowledge God's declaration of our pathetic state, which is there is no one who does good, not even one, and all have fallen short of the glory of God. And Jesus said also, all your righteousness is as filthy rags. We have to start with that theology of ourselves. And when we understand what we truly are, then we'll realize, boy, we don't have any basis to judge one another. In Corinth, where Paul wrote the letters of 1st and 2nd Corinthians, they were judging one another all over the place, and even judging their preachers, and even judging the Apostle Paul himself, because he wrote very strong letters. And some of them were really rebuking them for things. But when he came to speak, he wasn't very eloquent. And so they kind of looked down on him and compared him with other speakers like Apollos and Peter. But here's what Paul said about that. Let such a person understand that what we say by letter when absent, we do when present. Not that we dare to classify or compare ourselves with some of those who are commending themselves, but when they measure themselves by one another and compare themselves with one another, they are without understanding. And then he mentions something interesting about boasting. And here's where we should be. Let the one who boasts boast in the Lord, for it is not want the one who commends himself who is approved, but the one whom the Lord commends. So that's like so key. And even Jeremiah, the prophet in the Old Testament, picked up on that idea when he said, thus says the Lord, let not the wise man boast in his wisdom, let not the mighty man boast in his might, let not the rich man boast in his riches, but let him boast in me, for in this do I delight.
Yes, and how deceitful. I was thinking about boasting, and what does that have to do with marriage? Keeping the music playing. Well, our character traits that we have, if we don't pinpoint them and meditate on each one, like to what degree am I boastful? Even if it's just in my own thoughts and heart, and not even my husband might hear it, but I might be thinking, well, or you might be thinking about your wife, why on earth don't they do it better like this? Or why? So whatever it is that we're boastful or arrogant about, if we don't deal with that at a heart level with God, and you know how you study a language to learn it, right? And you study the people, and you want to study the language of God. You study him and his character, and you say, how does this fit into the kind of a beautiful life that he has planned and programmed? And so, because our hearts are deceitful, meaning we think more highly of ourselves than we ought, then that translates often into this boasting, this arrogance, where we put each other down. And we're going to talk in the next segment about a little bit further about laying down our pride and so forth.
And right
but
now,
James Taylor, yeah. Right now we have this song, Something in the Way She Moves, and it's only because his focus is on the other person and the beauty of that other person. And I think for me, thinking of how I'm arrogant toward my husband and boastful and have my clever little ways to put him down so nicely, when I take my focus off myself and all my goodness and just look at something in the way he moves, something, who he is, why God made him, when we
What's special about him or her?
Practice that. I think this song just reminded me of that. So here we go with James Taylor, Something in the Way She Moves.
There's something in the way she moves, or looks my way or calls my name, that seems to leave this troubled world behind. If I'm feeling down and blue, or troubled by some foolish game, she always seems to make me change my mind. And I feel fine anytime she's around me now. She's around me now, almost all the time. And if I'm well, can tell that she's been with me now. She's been with me now quite a long, long time, and I feel fine. Every now and then, the things I lean on lose their meaning, and I find myself careening places where I should not let me go. She has the power to go when no one else can find me. Yes, and to silently remind me of the happiness and good times that I know. But I said I just got to know them. It isn't what she's got to say, or how she thinks, or where she's been. To me, the words are nice the way they sound. I'd like to hear them best that way. It doesn't much matter what they mean, but she says them mostly just to calm me down. I feel fine anytime she's around me now. She's around me now almost all the time. And if I'm well, you can tell that she's been with me now. She's been with me now quite a long, long time. Yes, and I feel fine.
That was James Taylor. Very nice song. And one of the things I did notice about the song is how his girl made him feel. And that's really important.
Oh, really? That,
It didn't much matter what she said.
Really? Oh, yeah. I'll remember that one. It didn't much matter what she said.
Oh, it's licensed.
But it calmed him down, see?
Oh, it has to be calming.
Yes.
Oh. I guess I got work to do.
Anyway.
Generally, I'm a nice person, though, right, Bob?
Yes, generally speaking, you are.
Okay, we're at the Music of Marriage on your radio, WAKM. And we're happy to be with you on this Tuesday and talk about boasting. Isn't that a fun word? God's love language. One of the words in his list of what love is love does not boast, among the other things. Mm-hmm. If you go to themusicofmarriage.com, you can hear these radio shows as we put them up, and hopefully you'll be impressed like we are with the amazing light that is shed into our dark and discouraging situations. When we see that all we really need is a little light from above to light up our love, right? So mm-hmm. The thing about arrogance and how that comes out in marriage, as we just said, is, you know, you come across often in an overbearing manner. And I was saying how I think that's probably my biggest contribution to difficulties. And to analyze our character deficiencies, not just for the, for the purpose of improvement. And the good news about God's love language is you get instant karma. You get instant, well, karma is a little bit contradictory to God's, the whole thing, but you get instant good results, like so instant. And the walls that seem impenetrable and permanent, they just dissipate like steam in cold air or something. It just all of a sudden it's like, wow, the good vibes are back in your marriage because you turned that light on yourself. I looked in the mirror last night after studying this and I said, yeah, my arrogance is a problem and I have these very nice ways of putting down my husband and so forth, or thinking more highly of myself than I ought to. But Bob came up with a great thing that maybe you want to tell us about, and that is how when you become a Christian, you must lay down your pride in order to be a Christian. A lot of Christians do get married and they think, well, we're in a church, we have a preacher here, what could go wrong? Well, everything that's inside of us, of course, is going to challenge us. Yeah. And so in order to be a Christian, you have to lay down your pride. When a person becomes a Christian, he or she drops the arguments, which tears down the walls that are erected against God foremost, and thereby association with all relationships, and particularly marriage. What else about pride you were saying was so good?
I mean, pride is the very thing that's antithetical to Christianity, because it says I am self-sufficient and I don't need God. I'm not a sinner, it says, and so it erects these walls between God and man. But a Christian does what God tells us, which is boasting in the Lord, in his salvation, and not in their own good works, essentially. Not in their own goodness, not in their own achievements, successes, whatever it may be. And so it's very key to becoming a Christian. Our old pastor in back in the days of our church at Philadelphia, knew this woman who was an older, mature Christian, and been so for a while. And she came up to him one day and said, "You know, Jack, it seems like I've lost my faith. I don't know what it is. I've lost my faith." And Jack said to her, "Well, I don't think that you actually lost your faith. I think what it is that you had so much presumption that when God burned away all the presumption, all that was left was the little faith you had to begin with," which was a very, very, perceptive thing. Well, he knew the woman very well, so he was able to say that with confidence. And he said something else too, and he said, faith and pride have a lot in common, and that is confidence. So when you're proud, you're confident about it. And when you have faith, you're confident about it too.
I think what he said was pride and presumption are both very confident, right?
Well, yeah, pride and presumption are, but so is faith.
Okay.
Faith has a lot of confidence. You have to
be
confident to express faith the way you should express it, just all out. You know, believe God and trust him.
Well, and that's a lot of my thing, too. When I rely on my own righteousness, because, I feel that I've got so many things down because of my background, my training, my whatever, what's the difference between, I have a lot of faith in myself, and God is basically saying, if you're going to be following me, you got to build up core relational stability and trust through humility versus pride. So our relationships get torn down. We talked about breaking the walls by without how we do that with boasting and arrogance, being overbearing and condescending leads to arguments. And it leads to a core, kind of a rotting core in your apple of your marriage, you know, because you carry around this character trait. I mean, I'm talking about myself. And we have to deal with that. We have to get the rot out of the middle. So we're going to build up core relational stability and trust through humility versus pride and arrogance.
Yes. It's easy to deceive ourselves in thinking that we don't have these bad core characteristics. But deceit is another thing that really harms relationships. And so that's something that has to be rooted out.
And deceitfulness is part of self-glorification.
Yeah, it is.
And pride. Because I'm totally deceived when I really think I'm that much better than anybody, let alone my husband. Mm-hmm. I don't care how fault-filled your spouse is, you're not better than your spouse in God's sight. You're not better than, no matter if you're the wealthiest Elon Musk, then you can be a homeless man on the street or a beggar in some part of the world. You're equally valuable in God's sight. And when we develop God's love language and let that become our character, that builds up stability and trust too, because if you feel like you're around somebody who's kind of always coming off better than you, arrogant, boasting, prideful, you kind of always feel a little bit lowly compared to them. And that's not God's love language.
Right. And you know, Jesus is the perfect example of someone who was the most gifted person in the world and yet the most humble person in the world. And how did he really do that? Well, he showed us the harmony between giftedness and humility by emptying himself and becoming nothing, which is the most key characteristic of being a Christian, and yet the most elusive one, because no one thinks on a regular basis when they wake up in the morning, gee, I'm going to empty myself and become a servant. You know, often we wake up thinking full of ourselves, what do I want to do today? I want to do this, that, be successful.
Or how can my spouse serve me?
Yes.
So what's for breakfast, honey? Is it something I'll like? And how fast will you have it ready? And will it be hot? Or vice versa. You know, we wake up with expectations of our husband.
The thing we have to get down to is starting with nothing and then adding the things that love is on top of that. If you get rid of all the pride, the vanity, boasting, arrogance. If you're arrogant towards someone, you have an attitude and you're full of yourself. So start with what Jesus did. He emptied himself. And there's a perfect verse here about that in Philippians 2, where Paul says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility can count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this in mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not account equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking a form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. So as you see, that's what it takes to be what God expects you to be as a Christian. And as a husband and wife.
We have to have an attitude of servanthood. And I think enough of us have gone to church at least on Christmas and Easter. Hopefully we've found a place where we can hear God's love language for us on a regular basis. I hope if you have been considering, we met a guy who was waiting on us for dinner the other day who said he had a cross necklace and a cross earring, and he said, well, I'm seeking, you know, I'm really thinking that I should probably not work Sunday and go to church, and I should probably listen to what, and so wherever we're at, yeah, when we do listen, we find out how valuable we are to God and how relational Christianity is. It's really not religion, it's relationship, because the reality of the presence and the power and the person of Christ makes a difference, and it changes everything for the better very quickly when we surrender all to Him. And that's not a bad kind of surrendering. It's not an it's not a putting down surrendering. It's the kind of surrender that will elevates us so that God empowers us as we say, you know, I want to hear what you have to say. What is your love language? I want to learn it, and I want to be that toward you, God, and toward my fellow man, and especially in marriage. If we want the music to keep playing, that is what will really do the job. So, and that also brings in trust, because it's hard to feel confident if you're with a spouse who's always putting you down, because it wears away at your own feeling of self-worth. And maybe you grew up in a home where all it took was one time and your dad or mom said to you, you know, you're not going to amount to much. Or one comment like that. And that sticks with you your whole life. You're trying to overcome something that was said to you. And you don't feel confident in who you are because someone made a condescending comment like that. And we do that in so many ways when we put each other down in marriages, which has to really stop. I'm speaking to myself. We are speaking to ourselves in all of this to encourage each other that we can have beautiful marriages and the music can be resurrected, can be restored and keep playing. And our trust in each other when we say, you know, I'm sorry that I have this tendency to come off so holier than thou or better than thou, and make these condescending comments and so forth. Mm-hmm. That builds up confidence in the quote unquote lowliest person, which nobody in God's sight is lower than another, but we feel lower. But our core stability and strength in our relationship of marriage is amplified when we do what God says here, right? And deal with, and even if we know we're not going to do it perfectly, but even if your husband or wife says to you, you know, I'm like this, and it's something I want to work on. I want you to know I care about that. I don't want to be that overbearing person that makes you walk around feeling like this. There's this wall between us, or like you're inferior.
Yeah.
And that's a form of vanity when you're arrogant too, mm-hmm. and overbearing about it. And we're going to play a song by Carly Simon called You're So Vain that is kind of fun because it also just expresses how, you know, what we all know to be true of tendencies that we have, but it's a great fun little song.
Scarf it was out.
So welcome back to The Music of Marriage and our special emphasis today on boasting, which is arrogance and pride, and how it definitely creates a lot of arguments that seem to never end. In fact, they never end until we get to the courtroom or the legal papers. And then you sit there and you wonder, really? I wonder, did that have to happen? Could we have maybe pinpointed some of the character traits here and decided to adjust them, just like when we write a song and we write music and we listen and we say, yeah, maybe it needs a lift here or a repeat there or whatever. So in writing the music of our marriages and to keep the music playing, we are focusing on God's love language because that definitely will do the job for anybody who wants to apply his music theory to the music of their marriage. And his theory isn't just a theory, and it's not just theology. In fact, Bob, you were saying something very significant last night about sometimes we hear, oh, theology, that's bookishness, it's academic, you know. Christian life is about emotion, it's about feeling and all that. But actually, you were saying, if you don't understand the theology behind some of the commands, these things that we're told to do to have love in our lives, if you don't understand the why of it, then you're not as motivated to do it. It's kind of like anything. If you understand why the stuff under the hood of your car makes the battery die or the engine work, you're going to be a much better car mechanic than just being told, you know, press this button, press that button. So we were talking in the last segment about building up core strength in your marriage through stopping being vain, stopping being overbearing on your spouse, insisting on your own way as a form of pride and boastfulness. And I'm what's important. My thoughts, my perspective, it's what's important. And anybody,
sometimes,
right?
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Sometimes we can find that forum on social media by, you know, expressing our point of view on something very strongly. And
or even very nicely.
Or even very nicely, but anticipating how many likes we're going to get, how many shares, how many friends we're going to get, how many followers. And that's a form, really, of pride, you know, to be using, you know, those benchmarks to, you know, make yourself feel better about yourself. And it's comparing yourself, and it's looking for something to inflate your own ego, whether you know it or not. Now, there's nothing wrong with getting likes and followers and all that good stuff, but it's what is the reason? What's really behind it is what we're getting at. Like everything else in the Christian life, it all starts with something rooted deep down in you.
So this third segment here at The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie is, and I only say that because if you're wondering who are these people, I jumped in the middle. If you go to themusicofmarriage.com, you'll learn more about our book and so forth. But breaking down the roadblocks to humility, there are roadblocks to being humble when you're in a culture that glorifies self. And that's what Bob was talking about. I remember when I first got on Facebook, which I haven't been on for a while, and I'm very well happy with that, because I noticed you feel this awkwardness, and all of a sudden relationships and lifelong friendships would be completely fractured. And I don't know what it is about it, but it gets you to be so self-glorifying and so vain and so arrogant and so prideful that there's something I think we need to analyze about the character of the soul. I'm not kidding. Of our world, our country. Mm-hmm. What am I as an individual doing when I, you know, and you sit there, and how long does it take you to decide, what picture of myself should I put up? Do I look better in these earrings? Or looking off to the side, oh, that shows my mole. Maybe I better look this way for the public.
Yeah.
It's very insidious, and that has set us up to where there's a lot of division, completely unnecessary. It's a whole opens up a whole new world of arguing and divisiveness and destruction of relationships.
It could be your political or ideology that gets you into arguments with others, where you're pretty much insisting that your point of view is right and theirs is wrong.
Right.
And, you know, it may be, but love isn't pushy. It doesn't push back at you. It doesn't elevate yourself above someone else.
I find it interesting how they try to police social media sites. And I think it's interesting because they're creating a situation where they're making money off people getting mad at each other and getting all uptight and feeling like, I've got to top that one. I've got to top that picture about how well she makes her bed with how well my kid makes his bed.
Right.
Or I've got to top that political dopey point he made with my great politician's point. You know, we're always like vying for something. And like we've been talking about, pride, arrogance, and boasting is not God's love language, or vanity, which we saw.
Mm-hmm.
So to try to get through some of these last awesome points. Oh, you know, do they ever apply God's template to relationships on social media? Well, without that, just like in marriage, we have division, we have destruction, we have arguments, we have people crying, oh, my best friend, they don't talk to me anymore because I said I voted for so-and-so, or I didn't believe in masks, or whatever. I'm thinking, really? If it's that easy, then how does that translate to our marriages? So how do you break down, and how do you have humility in a culture that glorifies self? Well, Bob came up with a great concept.
Yeah, the Bible talks about the Christian life and what is necessary not only for salvation but for living the Christian life. And when you get that, it's really all you need to have a great marriage and great relationships. It doesn't mean you can't find creative ways to love your spouse outside of what we're talking about here. Of course, you want to do that. Creativity is a wonderful thing. But if you have these basics down, all the negatives that the Bible talks about in 1 Corinthians 13 aren't going to get in the way of your relationship. And additionally, if both of you understand that this is our need and our condition, then you'll exercise patience and forbearance with one another in the graces of God's love language.
Yep, that's right. So in the music of marriage, to keep it playing, boasting, arrogance, pride, vanity, and putting down each other. Okay, each of us has an assignment for the week. Don't do it for the entire week, okay? Because we're going to be without our spouse, whether we're legally separate in another house or we're going to be within our house without our spouse. Mm-hmm. And Harry Nilsson wrote a song called Without You that just explains, I guess, how life isn't so great without the other person. And we don't want that. We want connectedness. We want core strength and stability and trust and a feeling of belonging. So,
and more importantly, how great it is with the other person.
Right. And thanks to God for showing us that way.
Yeah.
For showing us that that way is just a heartbeat away.
Exactly.
So here's Harry Nilsson, Without You, and we hope you have a great week. Check out the Music of Marriage. Bye. Thank you.
this evening, or your face as you were leaving, but I guess that's just the way the story goes. You always smile, but in your eyes your sorrow shows. Yes, it shows. I can't forget tomorrow when I think of all my sorrow. Well, I had you there, but then I let you go. And now it's only fair that I should let you know what you should know. Always smile, but